The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Greetings and thanks very much for joining me for today's episode of Climate Matters. I'm Lindsay Wood, the Director of Climate Strategy Company Resilience Limited, and Climate Matters is brought to you by Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. It's also broadcast throughout the Canterbury region on Plains Media and also through the Wairarapa on Arrow FM. So greetings to all of you. Just before we start the main show, this is a quick reminder that we're in the last week of the Love Letter to the World poetry competition that closes on Valentine's Day. When else? On the 14th of February. That's Saturday the 14th. So information is at www.resilience, that's R-E-S-I-L-I-E-N-Z, resilience.co.nz, and then navigate to the Love Letter page there. Okay, so much for that. Now let's get into today's episode of Climate Matters. And today's episode is a Climate Matters special. It's one that I've called Joining Big Dots Special. I had already got it in the pipeline when the awful weather events and the unfolding tragedies of the last week or two unfolded, so they have also been captured into it. Here's what we'll be covering. First of all, a genuine sympathy for all the victims and their families of the landslides and flooding. It's appalling. It's there are no words that can really be adequate for that situation. Now we get to the big dots bit. The New Zealand, these are the headings for the what's coming. New Zealand government is complicit in increasing risks of floods and slips and more. And then one just simply headed, tie your tamariki to you. That will become clear shortly. Next item is, when should an emergency warning be given and to whom? And then another one, dots of a different kind, a UK national security report. And then more big dots on national security. And finally, I'll do my best to talk you through a geeky mind game that I put in the actual Substack issue of Climate Matters. So just to give you a bit of a feel, this Climate Matters is not only called the Joining Big Dot Special, but it's also got quite a number of mind map type dot diagrams in it. So I'll do my best for those. But I do encourage you to actually go and have a look at the real Substack copy. And there is a link to that in the show notes on the Fresh FM Climate Matters webpage, and you'll get quite a lot more out of this particular article and episode, I think, if you can see the diagrams and so on. Anyway, let's get into it. Fasten your seat belts is what I wrote for a fairly long and serious read, and do check out the amazing spiral image near the end. We'll come to that in due course. I wrote this Climate Matters between the 22nd and the 24th of January, just at the time when the North Island was again reeling under atrocious weather, with declared emergencies all down the East Coast and bringing fresh tragedy, as we all know, only too well. As I mentioned, I'd already got this Join the Big Dot special on the way, but that had to be folded into this article as well. However, really a genuine sympathy to all the loved ones of those who have perished in this latest catastrophe. And whatever the cause and wherever you want to lay the blame, it's nonetheless heart-wrenching for all of those involved. It also unfolded the same week the Prime Minister announced the election date. There should be no doubt that these events should also influence how we vote in November. I have some very serious things to say about this government, as you will see shortly. The New Zealand government is knowingly increasing the risk of slips and floods. I don't say that lightly. Here's what I wrote in the Climate Matters. Make no mistake, the current New Zealand government has chosen to ignore wide-ranging, robust climate advice from numerous sources. In so doing, it is knowingly choosing policies that intensify storms, floods, sea level rise, ocean acidification, heat waves, and much more in favour of policies they think will make more money for some people. That's followed by a diagram that does try to join the dots, and I'm going to try and explain it to you. I know very well about the sources of information that have been drawn to the Prime Minister and to the Minister of Climate Change's attention. If you've listened to this show, you will know I've referenced sometimes correspondence with them. But I think it must be said, first of all, their main source of advice and climate information under law is from the Climate Change Commission. The Climate Change Commission gives them a lot of very well-researched advice. This government consistently either ignores or downplays the advice, or in some cases bypasses it, such as on the methane target setting process. So the Climate Change Commission is one source. Another source is the Nelson Tasman Climate Forum and 32 specialists who wrote many letters to the government last year. I was very active in that process. We initially quoted to the Prime Minister what was known as the 2024 State of the Climate Report, subtitled Perilous Times on Planet Earth. It was written by global leaders in climate research. It was published by the Oxford University Press, and we copied it to the Prime Minister and the Minister for Climate Change. We also then, in a series of 9 letters, we copied to them the report from the Boston Consulting Group. That's one of the world's biggest management consulting groups, and working with Cambridge University, and they were talking about the need to invest in climate strategies. We also sent to them a warning developed by the United Kingdom Faculty of Actuaries. They're the people that assess insurance risks, and they were working with the UK's University of Exeter, sounding dire warnings. And then we also had correspondence with Simon Watts, particularly on the what was known as the Reserve Bank stress test, which he referred to, and we in turn pointed out where it was inadequate for considering the climate situation. So there was a whole raft of correspondence. And then, about the time that we finished that, and by coincidence, there was a conference in New Zealand with 26 international climate experts at it. They knew that the government was considering what's known as the no additional warming policy. The scientists wrote an open letter to the Prime Minister saying, don't adopt that policy. It is not fit for the purpose and it is not consistent with the science. However, the government had already set up the methane review panel, as it became known, and they were briefed in essence to find an answer and come up with a number that the Prime Minister and the Cabinet wanted for their methane emissions targets. It wasn't about the best science at all. So as a result, we've got a whole string of climate actions and related policies that have been enfeebled, have been halted or weakened as a result of this government's behaviour. And these things all worsen the risks of floods, landslides, and all the other dire consequences and impacts from an escalating climate crisis. Be in no doubt, this government knows what they're doing, and they're willing to expose us to those risks in the process. Okay, in the process of writing this, I came across a Dr. Seuss book that I hadn't known before called I Can Read With My Eyes Shut. And I thought, well, it has a bit of a bearing on the way this government is behaving. So here's a quote. If you read with your eyes shut, you're likely to find that the place that you're going is far, far behind. And that seems to fit so well to this government's approach, that they shut their eyes to the information they should be looking at. They come up with policies that are drastically outdated. They barely fit at the end of last century. And so I've subtitled that possibly, is that the new cabinet manual? Right, going on. Joining little big dots, quotes, tie your tamariki to you. And I was quoting there from Radio New Zealand on the 22nd of January. RNZ, in its official emergency radio station capacity, has advised people subject to flooding risk to tie their tamariki to them, tie their little kids to them. Let's think about that. That's saying the threat is so extreme that tying small children to adults might be the best chance of keeping those children safe. And the concept of safety being purely relative in that context. To be honest, I teared up when I heard that at the thought of these little children and of their carers in such a desperate plight. But then my tears actually gave way to outrage at a government consistently turning its back on climate responsible policies, instead favouring ones that either make the crisis worse, for example, coal, oil and gas exploration and major highway construction, or soft pedal on making it better, such as the enfeebled methane targets and removing clean car incentives. Now, I'm not suggesting this government is responsible for these particular storms, but I am outraged at their pursuit of policies that are expected to make such storms and numerous other adverse climate impacts worse, precisely when we should be pulling out all the stops to make them better. A government should strive to safeguard its citizens, not put them at increased risk, especially not so that some other people can profit by the circumstances that the government policy creates. While I've yet to see the attribution science for these storms, attribution science is the analysis of how much extra storm is due to climate change, but their intensity is consistent with basic physics. That is, an atmosphere that's 1.5 degrees C hotter, and that's about where we're at the moment, holds about 10% more water vapor before it starts to rain. And then it can also deliver it in more energetic storms because it is actually a hotter system. Add to that that just today came out, and I'm recording this on the 28th of January, came out the conversation piece by Professor James Renwick from Victoria. And Prof. Renwick actually makes it clear that as well as this 10% extra moisture I've talked about, the quirks of having all sorts of different intensifiers around the climate change, such as warmer ocean heating or possible other effects combining to give local bursts, means that actually the deluges can be up to 30% increased due to climate change. That's a massive increase in water flow that all our systems have to try and capture. So let's join the dots on this. The government knowingly adopts policies that increase the likelihood that some of us will need to tie our tamariki to us for their safety. So here are the dots to join in that case. Quite simply, the coalition government policies intensify climate change. Climate change intensifies storms. Stronger storms put tamariki at greater risk, and that means that indirectly the government policies are increasing the likelihood that we'll have to tie our tamariki to us for their safety. Incredible. Okay, when should a warning be given and to whom? And it's a double-barreled item this time. In the aftermath of the tragedy at Mount Maunganui and elsewhere, there were lots of serious questions reverberating in the media about who knew what, who should have told whom, and when they did tell them. And I'm not going to write a lot about that particular tragic event, except to highlight the sickening parallel with the present government failing to heed or publicise expert advice and well-founded warnings on climate, as we were talking about in the first item here. But they haven't been telling the public this, let alone developing their own policies around it. Does anyone think that the Prime Minister and Climate Change Minister actually believe they're so powerful that their opinion stands above the laws of physics, or above the history of this planet, or above all the scientific evidence that has emerged over decades? Of course, we don't expect them to feel they're so powerful. So then what it might be? Does anyone then believe the Prime Minister, etc., are so dogmatic that they're willing to cherry-pick information, or, I've said, even have it manufactured? And if you go back to the Climate Matters methane special late last year, that is a case of manufacturing information they want to be able to present to the public. So are they so dogmatic that they're willing to cherry-pick information or have it manufactured to suit their immediate objectives, and to ignore stark warnings to the contrary? Well, that does seem to be the case. And even when they know it's likely to exacerbate harm, that still seems to be the case. If I now quote from US Senator Patrick Moynihan, I'm sure you know the quote, even if you don't know who originally said it: people are entitled to their own opinions, but not to their own facts. If at the same time as I Googled that, Google's AI came up with a summary: this phrase is a cornerstone of critical thinking and rational debate, separating personal belief from observable reality. So my conclusion out of that is that in ignoring this cornerstone of critical thinking, the coalition government is selling us desperately short and putting us at escalating risk. But there's actually more. The Climate Matters 146 referenced the UK National Emergency Briefing. I'll put a link to a good commentary. It'll be the same link that has been in previous issues of Climate Matters. That emergency briefing highlighted the UK media's statutory duty to keep the public informed on emergencies. The briefing then called out the UK media for failing in their duty to keep the public informed on the climate emergency. So let's dial through to New Zealand. What might Radio New Zealand's statutory obligations be to keep us informed on the climate emergency? After all, we did declare a climate emergency in 2020, and as far as my research shows, it has never been repealed. And certainly it's never got less of an emergency. The radio station regularly reminds us, it quotes, the lifeline radio broadcaster, close quotes. And that is actually enshrined in the Civil Defence Emergency Management Act of 2002. And I want to give RNZ a pat on the back. I think they do a fine job at the level of immediate disasters, such as floods and earthquakes and wildfires and so on. If I then go onto their website and find their 2025 media release number, 276, if you're interested, it's headed RNZ Helping New Zealanders Get Prepared for an Emergency. So what might RNZ's duty be regarding helping us get prepared for the climate emergency? Well, I went into the Civil Defence Emergency Management Act 2002, and it has a definition of emergency. Why I did that, I wanted to check whether the climate emergency aligned with the emergency that RNZ was required to work to. And it does. There are three parts of the definition of an emergency under the Act. And bingo, the climate emergency ticks all of those boxes. So yes, it is an emergency in the manner that the RNZ is meant to deal with. And as they say, they're helping us get prepared for the climate emergency. So how is RNZ acting as our lifeline radio broadcaster? Well, very sadly, it's not even close to what it should be doing. And that actually hurts me to say that, because it's my radio station of choice. I have huge respect for some of our outstanding program hosts. And it also has you know, quite a lot of interesting and topical programs on climate. But if anyone thinks it's doing even a fair job keeping us informed on climate at the level of emergency preparedness, then I suggest you first of all check out the National Emergency Briefing that I mentioned before. That's a 26-minute podcast. Or climate guru Johan Rockström's TED Talk on climate tipping points. That's an 18-minute TED Talk. Or the item that I'm going to come to in a moment about the UK national security briefing. And that is, for example, it is saying, get this, around the world, every critical ecosystem is on a pathway to collapse. I'll say that again. Every critical ecosystem is on a pathway to collapse. What is RNZ doing to alert us to that possibility? Nothing at all. It's so, and that's the sort of information the government should be alerting us to it, and so should councils. So this is a very grave omission in my view. I've drawn a join the dots diagram there showing basically distinguishing short-term emergencies like storm, fire, earthquake, etc., which are well catered for by Radio New Zealand and therefore informing the public, and the climate emergency where the information doesn't really get processed by RNZ in anything like the way that it should. And I should say here that TVNZ, also TV1, is in the mix there as well as being a broadcaster. Okay, time to keep moving. We're running short on time. Dots of a different kind, a refreshing look at a bleak future. That's a paradox, isn't it? Heaven knows why such a portentous document, and I'm talking about global biodiversity loss, ecosystem collapse, and national security in the UK. Heaven knows why such a document might seem refreshing. I think that's a symptom of just how badly most governments are responding to the climate crisis. But it might only be one that's opening the UK's eyes, because it appears that 10 Downing Street tried to block the release of the report. So hot on the heels of the non-government national emergency briefing that I mentioned a bit earlier, the UK government's released this as a milestone paper. There'll be a link to it in the show notes. It's just 13 pages, and we should all read it and understand what it's saying. It's not joyful news we want to hear, but certainly news we need to hear. And here's what one expert wrote that I know personally. Impressive, it's so hard-hitting for a government document. The tone is set, for example, on the first page. No disclaimers, no credits, no euphemistic introduction, but seven blunt key judgments, of which number four, assessed with what they called high confidence. In other words, they're really sure it's going to happen, is what I mentioned before. Every critical ecosystem is on a pathway to collapse. The report framed three questions that were posed to the government. They should be posed to this government too. What are the most significant implications of global biodiversity loss and ecosystem collapse? Which ecosystems are more critical for, in our case, New Zealand national security? What would be the impact on New Zealand national security from the collapse of individual critical ecosystems? However, having said all of that, which is dire enough, let's keep in mind that national security is just one of a whole lot of consequences of how we're abusing our planet. The New Zealand government must be confronted with those questions. Hold that thought, consider how you can pose them to government, and then try and find a way to do that. More big dots on national security. Climate Matters 146 recommended the Nate Hagans interview with Australian investor Craig Tyndale, who had lots to say about mineral flows around the world, China's growing stranglehold on them, and how vulnerable that makes the West. For example, Russia can access critical minerals to manufacture missiles 10 times faster than the US. And when the chips are down, nations might have to choose between using scarce minerals to defend themselves or to transition to renewable energy. So there's the climate rub in all of this, because there may well not be enough minerals for both. And to quote Tyndale, there's about 500 ounces of silver in every large missile. That's enough silver for about 800 solar panels. Does the silver go to the missile, or does the silver go to the solar panels? And the final item, unfortunately, is one that we don't have time for, the story of CO2. It's a geeky revisit of a fairly familiar mind game that just shows how infinitesimally small our civilization is in the history of the planet. But we'll have to leave that for another time. And that's from now, Lindsay, thanking you for your company. Kia kaha for the climate. And as you know, Climate Matters is brought to you by Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. Fresh FM broadcasts to Blenheim on 88.9, Eastern Golden Bay on 95.0, to the Nelson CBD on 107.2, and across the Nelson Tasman region on 104.8. It's also streamed to the planet on freshfm.co.nz, and podcasts of Climate Matters and other locally produced shows are available through freshfm.co.nz.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.